Good day, everyone, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and I'm really glad you've joined us today. It's no secret that as Detroiters, we care an awful lot about what happens in the auto industry. What happens to GM and Ford and Stellantis really has an impact on almost all of us. It impacts, of course, people working on those kind of cars, building them, designing them, but also people in related fields like auto repair and tire shops and even in seemingly unrelated professions, barbers, school teachers, bartenders. Whatever you do here, it is at least tangentially related to the auto industry. So it's not a surprise either that people took notice when General Motors decided to offer buyouts to its white-collar workers in an attempt to cut $2 billion in costs. And this all comes alongside more news in the automotive world, the fact that the United Auto Workers voted in six reform candidates to the UAW Executive Board. A little later in the program, we're going to talk about Detroit politics, specifically as it relates to the recent public meeting at City Council held about the District Detroit and what the future of that project looks like this week. But before we get there, we wanted to stop for a bit and talk about GM and what these salaried buyouts mean. Why did GM do this? What does this say about the amount of jobs needed as car companies transition to an electric future? And what does changing leadership within the UAW mean for the automotive industry? To talk about all this, we've got Jamie Butters with us. He is the executive editor of the Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. He recently wrote also about this buyout. Jamie, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Oh, hi, Stephen. Good to be here. Sorry about that. There you are. A little technical problem on my end.
No worries. So let's start with the buyouts. What do these look like practically? $2 billion in costs is what GM says it needs to save. What's going on here? Is this about the soft economy or is this about long-term change?
You know, GM has added a lot of salaried employees since the last time it did buyouts. So I think there's some legitimate argument that GM has made, you know, that they have too many people, maybe too many people in some of the wrong areas, maybe too many people still working on engineering for internal combustion engine vehicles, which of course are kind of slowly being phased out in favor of electric vehicles. GM aims to get to about 50% of each. And you think about the long term or the medium term, right? GM's going to do trucks with, gas burning engines and, smaller cars, probably mostly with batteries. And so there are going to be people that they don't need as many of, and maybe it's harder to retrain them. The fact that they are buyout offers, they're not cutting heads across the board or anything mm-hmm. like that. It definitely softens it. It gives the sense, it's letting people, if they have another offer they were thinking about, if they were thinking about retiring early, maybe they want to take this. It's not the most generous package that automakers have ever offered to salaried workers. But, if you've been, you get a month of salary for every year you've been on the job, up to 1 year. So you can get 1 year of pay, to buy yourself some time to figure out what you want to do. And, It's not a bad offer if you were thinking about leaving, but it does send a bit of a chill, especially when it's followed by, some warnings that if not enough people take it, then they mm-hmm. may need to take other steps to get more people out the door.
Yeah. So I'll put this into a little bit more of the wider context here at GM. You say this is a smart move for a CEO, Mary Barra. What is this? How does this connect to the challenges, I guess, that GM is facing in big picture terms?
Well, right. I mean, GM is such a big player in the economy, right? They feel it when the tide rises and when the tide falls. And there's a lot of concern about the economy. I mean, not huge concern. Obviously, it's really humming along strongly. But as the Fed tries to rein in interest rates, will there be a recession? Will they overshoot? Now we've got, concerns about banks that we didn't have even when these plans were announced. So, you know, there is recession risk. There is the huge cost to convert to electric vehicles that GM and everyone else is facing. So they've got to, you know, they've got every $1 billion counts. So saving a couple $1 billion or a couple $1 billion a year for the rest of the decade, you know, will be important to GM making that transition to the electric future. But yeah, so that's I think part of it. And like it's, like we were saying in the broader economy, it is still a pretty good job market. So maybe people will be glad to have this opportunity to go try something new. But for GM, you know, they're looking into a little bit of a scary economy. We're going to see, you know, profits have been through the roof with the scarcity that the industry has had during the COVID times. And GM in particular is trying to maintain discipline on inventory, not overproduce. They idled a pickup truck plant, you know, to try to not get too much out there that would cause them to go back into all the bad old habits of selling vehicles with huge discounts and not making enough money on them. But we know there's going to be some reversion to the mean. There is going to be more production. Prices are going to be less, you know, sky high than they have been lately. You know, for a while, half of all new vehicle purchases were for above MSRP. And that's just unthinkable historically. But we've been in this historic period where so they're just, the automakers and the dealers have been making really outsized profits, and that's not going to last. And it is smart to think ahead, not assume that you're going to keep making, you know, $1 billion+ every month in operating profit. GM has been really profitable for the last few years, as has most of the industry.
I'm talking with Jamie Butters. He's executive editor of Automotive News, co-host also of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. Right now, we're talking about GM's offer to white-collar workers to take buyouts in search of about $2 billion in cost-cutting inside the company. In a little bit, we're going to talk about what's going on with the UAW, its executive board, and a presidential election. We want to hear from you as well during the conversation. Give us a sense of what you think about GM's buyouts. You think this is a good thing or a bad sign of things to come for GM and for the broader auto industry, which, of course, has a lot to do with our lot in life here in Metro Detroit. What do you make of the future of the auto industry? What excites you about it? What concerns you about it? 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Especially want to hear from folks who've been offered this buyout at GM. Are you taking it? Are you thinking about it? Let us know what you're thinking about there. Jamie, before we get to listeners, I want to talk about something that's kind of related to this. The price of a new car right now is just beyond what I could ever imagine paying for a vehicle. You know, and that's for just, you know, a regular sedan, not a luxury SUV. But we're starting to see cars with six-figure price tags on them. And again, not like some crazy car. This is just a car. So I'm not in a position to spend that kind of money on a car. I would never be able to wrap my mind around it. And I imagine I'm not alone. So I guess my question to you is the industry concerned about the rising cost of cars and what I think inevitably will be some sort of drop off in sales if this continues? I don't know that people seem ready to pay, you know, an average of $50,000 or more for a new car.
Yeah, it is a concern for different stakeholders in the industry in different ways. I think, you know, to a certain extent, the auto industry, the manufacturers, unless they have a few of them might still have really good scale that they can pump out large numbers of vehicles and make money on all of them. But a lot of automakers would rather, you know, make fewer vehicles, make higher end vehicles, sell fewer of them and make more money per car. And maybe that works best for the automaker. that is not necessarily a great strategy that trickles down to the suppliers. You know, if we say we're going to accept that the U.S. market's going to be 15 million vehicles a year instead of 17, mm-hmm. pushing 18 like it was before COVID, you know, that's going to be 10% less work for suppliers. It's going to be 10% fewer vehicles being sold at dealerships. So that's not really a strategy that appeals to dealers, although they do make more per vehicle as well at the lower volumes. It's a lot to weigh against, but there are so many players in the auto industry. It just seems like there's always going to be somebody to push and say, we can make more, we can sell more, you know, let's go for it. Let's get our market share. Let's get more revenue. And that's going to put pressure on everyone else. So it is challenging, but the prices are high. You know, the technology is expensive. Mm-hmm. And you don't see, right? You don't see a lot of stripped down cars being sold with just a basic radio and, you know, and a heater, right? Right. There's telematics, there's heated seats and, driver assist packages. I drove, when you say six figure vehicles, there are a lot more of them than there used to be. Those are still pretty special. You know, they're Hummer EVs or they're Lucid Airs. But I drove a Toyota Camry that was $40,000. As a test vehicle, a $40,000 Camry, right? I mean, that is used to be the basic vanilla, car of middle America.
Entry level car, right?
Yeah, mid-size. You know, it's a family car. You'd come into maybe a Corolla or Ford Focus subcompact, and then you grow up, when you have a family. But that was the classic family sedan. And you can still get a Camry for less than 30, but it just blew my mind. It's like a luxury car. And you see this across the board. I mean, the GM and Ford and Stellantis have kind of gotten out of the sedan business for the most part. We don't have that comparison that we would have had in the past. It all goes back to scarcity and the cost of technology. So there aren't that many other sedans out there. And if they're going to put in all that luxury technology, they're going to charge you a luxury price.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us. Let's start today with Cheryl Ann in Ontario. Cheryl Ann, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Detroiters.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So I was thinking, as players go, I grew up in a moto auto industry GM family. My dad started on the line. And there were incentives at the time. I wondered if your guest could elaborate. The incentive was he started on the line, ended up past retirement as supervisor in the city of Oshawa, actually, and where I started out. But the incentives were if you came up with solutions on the line, you were given a cash payout on your check.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he was able to go up through the echelons. So I was wondering, if you guys could comment on any incentives you're giving to your workers. Because I can't get any answers from people I know that are engineers now.
That's an interesting question, Cheryl Ann. Thanks for the call. Jamie, what's the answer?
You know, these are really common at the Japanese-owned plants. I mean, Toyota and Honda, for some line workers, it's a really important part of their compensation. You know, if they're clever enough to keep coming up with solutions, I think, at Toyota, I think they've done it historically as a percentage of the savings, probably with a cap because they can sometimes they can save so much money that maybe somebody wouldn't want to keep working and coming up with new ideas. For them, they call it Kaizen, continuous improvement. I believe that the Detroit automakers have some sort of a reward program, but it's not easy, and that's not the way with the union relationship. That's not really the way it's designed, right? I think a lot of union folks would be like, it's not our job to design the factory or to design the car or the parts. The engineers are supposed to do that, and we're supposed to put them together. And you have this division of labor that does make that different. I do think there is some flexibility, and they don't want to discourage people sharing ideas, but it's not as systematic as at some of the Japanese automakers.
Again, Cheryl Ann, really appreciate the call and And the question, let's go next to Harry in Sterling Heights. Harry.
Yeah, it's a great, controversy on this site. I'm an old guy. I bought a 1970 Duster for $2,359. He's a point A to point B. They had a Maverick. They had the Nova. Just simple transportation. I don't need heated seats. I don't need these computers. I don't need all that. Just something to get me to work and back. You know, when I was a kid, people bought a station wagon. They'd laugh at you. And these SUVs now, they're glorified station wagons. People buy pickup trucks with leather seats. Everything that they don't know 2x4 from a 4x4. I just don't get it anymore.
Harry, I'm pretty close to your camp here. I will say I have become very accustomed to many of the things that we have in cars now, and I like the gadgets. But it is kind of a question about, I guess, the market, Jamie, and you know what people are demanding, but also what the industry is kind of deciding needs to just be standard as we get to a future that's going to look different than it does now. A lot of the things that it seems like they're doing in cars right now are about electrification. Driverless vehicles, automated vehicles. More of the car is automated now than it was before. So I guess what's driving what? Is it consumer demand that wants these luxuries, or is it that there's a future that we're coming up on that we'll actually need more of these things for?
You know, it's all of those things. I mean, certainly when they load them up with the technology and the prices get high, they're still selling them all with very little discounts. So they're getting a lot of positive reinforcement from the American consumer. But this outrage, you know, this frustration, you know, that Harry is feeling and that you're feeling, you know, I think there is some thought that this opens the door to, you know, to Chinese automakers or other, you know, low cost, less fancy, probably lower quality, you know, vehicles from other markets, because it's, you know, it's too hard to make vehicles here or even probably in Mexico that can be as profitable as the automakers want, you know, at a price like $20,000 anymore. It's, you know, it's very difficult. There's a very narrow window for that. Maybe from one of these other places it could be possible. We see, you know, VinFast trying to come in and with a really complicated pricing scheme on, you know, leasing the battery separate from the vehicle that you purchase. There's some on the electric side in particular. Of course, China has been all in on, or has been really leaning in hard on electrics for several years and has a much more developed value chain from, you know, minerals, mineral processing, battery making. So BYD, and some other brands like that are really pushing more into Europe because we still sort of have a trade war with China, and Europe not so much, doesn't as much have that. But, you know, maybe if we didn't have a 25%, you know, tariff on the Chinese imports, they can start offering some lower cost vehicles, more options, more variety for U.S. consumers. Of course, then we also have the advocates for, you know, self-driving cars. Whether it's, you know, Elon Musk at Tesla, there's a lot of baggage with that. But, you know, General Motors and their Cruise unit is making a lot of progress on robo-taxis. Their vision is to make it, you know, profoundly cheaper by the mile than car ownership is today.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the future.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Jamie Butters of Automotive News. We're going to catch up with him on what's going on with the UAW executive leadership. We also will continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. Mark in Redford will get to you next. If you want to join him, 313-577-1019 is the number. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for joining. Our guest right now is Jamie Butters. He is executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. We're talking about GM's white-collar buyout, and in a minute we're going to talk a little about the executive leadership of the UAW. Want to hear from you, the listeners, during the conversation as well. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. Jamie, I do want to talk about this this change at the UAW, and you know, I'm old enough to remember a time when something like this would have made huge news all over the city. The dailies and the television stations would have been all over it. It hasn't made that much news. So I want to talk a little about what's going on and why it's significant.
Yeah, there's the profound change of direct election of UAW leaders. I mean, that's really a new and totally different thing. And, you know, of course, we talk about in the, you know, American democratic system, we don't really directly vote for the president. We vote for, you know, delegates to the electoral college, but it sort of maths out, at least within the, state by state. With this, there was a slate. They were chosen by a group of leaders. It's almost more like it was a one party system, right? So that was all you could vote for. And now they have direct elections, but there was, there's a runoff. There's been challenges. It took more than a week, a week and a half to even just get started counting the contested ballots. And here we are. They're supposed to have a convention. They're supposed to have a bargaining convention on Monday, and they don't know who the president is. And the guy who is the president, they don't know who the president is going to be. The gentleman who is currently the president is contesting the election, throwing up all sorts of complaints. I think it was just yesterday he had to swear in a new executive board member who he had said was ineligible just a few days ago. There's so much chaos at the UAW. And, I think for the U.S. auto industry, for the traditional U.S. auto, the UAW auto industry, it's a real concern because for the first time in decades, they're negotiating against the Canadian union. Now it's called Unifor. It used to be the CAW. And they had their own little scandal. They have a new president, but they seem to know what they're doing and what they want to do. They're already floating some trial balloons about maybe profit sharing, which would indicate maybe a willingness to not take as big a raises. The UAW has had really great profit sharing in recent years, but the workers are upset. They're negotiating. The thing about these contracts they're so hard because the leadership has to negotiate a deal with the automakers.
Right.
How much are they willing to spend on factories and people and all that? How much can they afford to spend? And then they've got to get their members to agree to that deal. And if there's a disconnect at either of those parts of the two-step, then things break down and maybe there's a strike, so it's going to be really hard because, workers they've had the nice profit sharing, but hey, they had a role in making that happen. And inflation has been really high, for the last year and a half. So they probably want to be made up for that. And they also want to see billions of dollars in EV investments to secure their future. And, and that's going to be hard for the automakers to stomach because they're worried about costs and a slowing economy and how they get across what Alex Partners called the profit desert, making EVs. So while you try to build a profitable EV business, it's just this long journey without making any money. Tesla lost money for years and years before they became profitable.
So, you also say that you feel like GM is trying to tame the UAW. Can you explain that a little?
Yeah, I wasn't really trying to be provocative. I think there, I know there were other folks in town who had kind of the same idea, but the timing of this, right? I mean, you and I've been around for a long time. I've been covering autos in Detroit since 2000, and through that first decade, before the bankruptcies. Plant closings were like standard operating procedures for the Detroit automakers, sad as that was. Well, before they would close a plant, they usually cut a bunch of white collar jobs. You know, you need to show that you're spreading the pain around, that everyone's making sacrifices. You know, sometimes they cut dividends and all that. The timing of these job cuts from an extremely profitable company, they're offering them now. They're going to have a, you know, probably $1.8 billion profit hit in the short term that will mostly fall in the second quarter, right before they do the handshake ceremonies with the UAW. So, you know, to the extent that I think they're playing a long game and trying to show the UAW, hey, we're having to cut costs. I know things have been good, but we're cutting costs and we need you to not be getting too many hands in the cookie jar. And I don't know if it'll work, but I do think there's the timing of it is ideal for getting that message across. It's going to knock their profits down in the second quarter, which will be the most recent numbers as they're doing the negotiations, instead of these inflated COVID profits that they've racked up for the last 2.5 years.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go back to Mark in Redford. Mark, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen.
Hey.
Interesting conversation with Jamie here in Automotive News. We had a couple friends had buyouts, you know, with other conglomerates, other big trees. And I think part of the objective of doing that with GM, for example, is that they're trying to retool, for the directors from the executive office in Washington for electric vehicles and such. But I don't know if it's feasible or is it defeatist to retool for building light rails and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Great question, Mark. Jamie, go ahead.
Yeah, there's, you know, the Washington, you know, President Biden's a big fan of trains. I think there are some, you know, as part of the infrastructure bill, there is some work on light rail. I wouldn't expect a wholesale transformation of the U.S. Transportation network. I think we're more likely to get widespread robo-taxis before we're going to have, you know, a majority of commuters riding light rail.
And maybe
it's my auto bias, but it seems like something that's a lot closer. And of course, because the funding and the creation, and, you know, is on the backs is with a privately owned company, General Motors, or Google's Waymo, Tesla's Tesla. But it's not the federal government or state government spending billions or trillions of dollars to create a new system and try to make it work. You know, hey, let the capitalists take the risk.
Yeah. Okay. Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News and co-host of the Automotive News Daily Drive podcast. Always great to have you here with us on Detroit Today. Thanks for joining today.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to stay in Detroit, but we're going to pivot a little to talk about the District Detroit, where more people have weighed in with their opinions on what will happen with that project and what should happen with the big public subsidy that the project has asked for. Annalise Frank of Axios Detroit will join us next. We'll also want to continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.